Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything live call-in show. I'm your host, Wayne Lou. Joined as always, fellow co-host Josh Hart. Josh, what's going on?
My parents, thankfully, are doing well. I'm excited about reopening, but how are you doing, Will?
I'm doing great, man. Feeling, well, I don't know if I'm doing great, but relatively speaking, I'm doing pretty well. Busy week for the Raptors coming up. We've got 5 games, so obviously be working quite a bit, but, you know, I don't know, man. Are the Raptors stressing you out, or are you past that point this season where you're just like, yo, if they make the play-in tournament, you're cool with it. If they don't, you're cool with it. Are they still stressing you out at this point?
No, I don't. I think I kind of like that the Raptors have perfectly landed what my expectations are. And if they slightly exceed or slightly go below, it won't really make any difference. The Raptors are going to draft around the end of the lottery. So it's kind of, who cares? Like, they play in the tournament, they get to, I forget who's in the 7th or 8th, they play Charlotte or something. Cool. They don't. I think the Raptors offseason, it's going to be really exciting, and the most exciting one in a long time. And I'm pretty confident that the 6 guys who are going to be with the team next year are fine, and like, I'm happy with the way they look. I don't know. Is there anything really to be... The only thing that's going to be upsetting is the, like, Kyle Lowry leaving rumor mill spinning back up. That's going to suck. But other than that, I'm good.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, I've already seen a vocal segment of the fan base already advocating for Kyle to move to the bench, Kurt Gary to start, and, yeah, I mean, that's going to be fun to deal with that. I mean, look, listen, no matter what happens with Kyle, I think I'm kind of at peace with all of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think this was the one year we sort of took a step back, really, like, reevaluated everything. And obviously the season being trash was a huge factor in that. But just, like, I think no matter which direction the Raptors move in, I'm kind of cool with it. Like, I am looking forward to a fresh start. You know what I mean? Hopefully everything in Ontario will be sorted out by then, which, you know, big if. There is still, like, a very strong... travel caution warning from the States to go to Canada. So we'll see how that's worked out. And if that is worked out by the end of when the season starts up again, which is probably this October, which, yeah, because that would be terrible if the Raptors had to play another season away from home. Because we're already seeing it with, like, TFC. They're playing away from home. We're seeing it with the Jays. They're playing away from home again. So... You know, what we don't want to see is the situation repeated. And hopefully Raptors can have, like, a semi-normal year next year. But, yeah. In the meantime, though, this thrilling play-in race that we alluded to. So the Raptors currently are the 12th seed. Wow. I mean, we're technically tied with the Bulls in record 4-11. But the Bulls have the tiebreaker over the Raptors. So the Raptors are the 12th seed at the moment. We're only two games back of the Washington Wizards, who have won 8 in a row. That's kind of amazing. And yeah, I don't know if the Raptors will make the tournament. If I had to ask you now, if the Raptors are going to make the play-in tournament, are you saying yes or no?
This week looks tough. I don't know. The Raptors could definitely get some breaks with the teams that they're playing resting guys and not wanting to play everybody, and that helps the Raptors' chances a lot. But I think, yeah, by this time next week, like after the Lakers, we'll kind of know if the Raptors have any shot at making the tournament. My guess is no. I think that the Lakers will especially be trying to work their guys back after the time missed by AD. And like AD against this Raptors team is going to be tough to watch. Expect him to, you know, have a great headline. Dave McMenamin is going to be tweeting AD's back on next Sunday night. But I don't know. I think it's going to be over. I think the season will be over in those quotation marks by this time next week. I feel like a couple weeks ago you circled this week on the calendar saying, depending where the Raptors are coming in and going out of this week, you kind of know what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Raptors handle their business in terms of if they wanted to compete, they need to beat all these like trash teams along the way, and they've done that. Really, the only games they've lost have been against the Knicks, and both games were pretty close. The second game was not as close in the final score, but was close for like 3.5 quarters. Yeah.
Close for 3 quarters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the circumstances are going to dictate so much. Like, it must be impossible to bet on like NBA games right now, because you just never know if like you come into a game and then there's like 6 players resting. Like, how are you going to bet on that, really? Unless you're going to bet like right after the injury information comes out. But in any case, we'll see what happens. Honestly, if the Raptors can come through this stretch with like even a 500 record, then they have a decent chance of making it. But sometimes it's also out of their hands at this point, because the Wizards are playing so well that like, they're running away with the 10th seed. What a stupid thing to say this season. But yeah, let's bring in our first caller. We got Alex on the line, and they want to talk about the Raptors' center position. Alex, what's going on?
How are you guys doing? Yeah, I think we all realized this season how important the center position really is. Ken Burch is pretty solid, but I don't know if he's really what we need if we want to be super competitive. Gilly looks nice, but it's kind of a unknown. So looking at the UFA's center position next season, it doesn't look too promising. I was just wondering what you guys think we should do.
Well, I think first off, we should probably try to keep Kim and Freddie. I think at this point, like I like Freddie as like a development guy. He seems relatively solid. I think you can do some things already on the court in terms of rebounding, in terms of some shot blocking, although sometimes he is quite lost. I thought the Knicks game, for example, he was really lost and a big part of why the bench struggled. And then Ken Burch is just solid. Like, I think you'd be very happy with Ken Burch as your backup center. Really, I think he probably maybe would like another center that can do just a little bit more offensively than Kem can. Maybe, you know, just an even bigger role threat to the basket, or like a spacing five. And it doesn't have to be someone that great. Like, I honestly think that, like, Lauri Markkanen, for example, is, like, the fourth string big right now for Chicago, behind Vucevic, behind Thad Young, behind even Daniel Theis. So I doubt they re-sign him. Like, that could be an opportunity. Even though he's an RFA, I think I'm probably looking at him as, like, a UFA, because I don't think Chicago has, you know, long-term plans for him. So even someone like that I'd be happy with. But John Collins is out there. Probably the Hawks re-sign him. And then Jared Allen. Yeah. Probably the Cavs re-sign him, but the Raptors were linked to him before. So what do you think, Josh?
I think Lauri Markkanen is going to be a Raptor. I like him. I think he's good. The beautiful blonde hair, I think it's like kind of a Toronto fit culture-wise. You know, foreign player, that whole thing. I don't know if like him and Chris make a great front court, but I don't know. I kind of like having flavors of big for Nick Nurse to play with next season. If we're able to bring him in for like the Raptors are going to have some cap spaces off season. I think like a starting five with Lauri Markkanen filling the center spot makes sense. And then if you have Boucher is able to play power forward full time in his reserve minutes next year with some, I don't know, lineups where he's at the five, but have Kem and Cat Daddy Gillespie. I kind of like
come on,
that.
We're not calling him that, man. Bids. Come on.
Why not? You don't like Cat Daddy Gillespie? I thought I'd try it out.
Who's under Cat Daddy since Kate Upton in like 2012, man?
Oh my goodness. What a.
That was the time. That was a real time.
Throwback. That was the time. Yeah. But I don't know. I think that makes sense. And I think that Markkanen's going to be a target for this front office this offseason. That's where I think the market. And I think you keep Cam, you keep Freddie G. Chris Boucher is able to play power forward full time. It's kind of nice. Like I think that works. I don't feel bad about that in any way.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Rashawn Holmes? I'm not exactly sure what his market value is going to be. I think there's going to be a pretty competitive market for it, but I think he could be a nice fit on our team.
Yeah, I like Rashawn Holmes too a lot. I know he's kind of under the radar because he's playing with the Kings and stuff like that, but I mean, he's really good. He's got good like physical moves around the basket. Defensively, I would probably think I would want a little bit more defensively out of that center position. But I mean, if we're talking about Markkanen and whatever, like he's not really going to be a huge defensive stopper at center either. I like Holmes. I think he just has like a good ability to play around the basket. Like if you play pick and roll, you find it to him. Even in sort of that mid range to like, you know, mid post area, he's going to find a way to finish. You know, he gets on the offensive glass. I like Rashawn Holmes. You know, I think the Kings. I mean, they probably should re-sign him. I mean, they do play him like a lot, so he's up to 30 minutes mm-hmm. a game, and I don't really know.
I mean, Kings don't have the best history of re-signing people.
That is true, and they have some issues with that. And he's not restricted; he's unrestricted, so he's free to go. But yeah, I'd be happy with Rashawn Holmes too. I think he fits the age of this team. Like he's 27. Which is right in line with like Pascal, Fred, Ken Burch, even Boucher. Like, yeah, I think a 2-year deal for Rashawn would be pretty nice as well. I'd be pretty happy with him. His nickname is
You guys
Dunk
saw
Man
what Steph Curry did to him yesterday, right?
Bro, that's Steph Curry, man. He'll do that to anybody except for Fred VanVleet.
Steph Curry's done that to probably nobody else. That was, I mean, that was. Yeah, Rashawn Holmes is nice piece. I don't see him leaving Sacramento, but what do I know? I thought that Harrison Barnes would be gone, and he's still something that didn't
Bro,
work
Harrison
out.
Barnes was looking like Kevin Durant in the first half of yesterday's game, but then he became Harrison Barnes again. So, Alex, we appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in.
I think if you were to limit, okay. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Please. That, we'll keep it rolling. We have Shante from Whitby. Shante, you want to join us on the show? Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the William Lou Rafter's Reaction podcast.
Thank you.
So just had a question about since William Lou seems to know a lot about Nick Nurse, whether he thought Nick Nurse was throwing shade a little bit at Chris Boucher after the Nets when he said we hadn't had blocking since, you know, since Ibaka, or whether he was just trying to throw shade on Baines. He wasn't trying to say anything about Boucher. Because, I mean, obviously Boucher has had five blocks before. So was it a thing or was it not a thing?
I don't think it was that intentional. I think anytime you sort of read a headline or basically any quote that's written out in like text, whether that's in a tweet or in a headline on YouTube, on a graphic or whatever, it always sounds, it takes a lot of the affectation and the context of the situation out of what they're saying. So it sounds maybe more severe than it is.
Well, no, because I listened to his actual, like, the actual interview on, like, on Yahoo. Mm-hmm. So it would, I heard him say it. But I think it was kind of directed at Baines, I guess he doesn't really think of him as a center. Maybe he thinks of him as more of a four, like he's supposed to be more a power forward, right? So
yeah,
he's not. He's talking about centers blocking, maybe.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And Chris gets so many blocks at the three-point line. That's like
that's a true.
Weird part of his game. Yeah. And I wonder if he just meant specifically blocking at the rim. Because Chris, you know, isn't the most incredible meet you in the restricted zone, like blocking big. Like he's not Roy Hibbert.
Yeah, well, I think what the situation here is, I don't think he was trying to send a message, because the history of Nick Nurse sending messages through the media is like very direct. Like if he's talking about you as a player, he will just talk about you as a player. And there's honestly like six or seven examples of this in the last like 2 years. Nick really loves to do this, or not even loves to do this. He's just very honest and transparent when he's asked about a player that he's not satisfied with. And I think in this situation, what's revealing is that I do think that Nick felt a sense of comfort in their defense from their centers in the last, you know, 2-3 weeks when they've had these two guys in, that he hasn't had since last year. And that's what he's trying to say, because I do think that Boucher, as much as he has games where he's had like 5-6 blocks and he's occasionally really, really good defensively at the rim, I think there's also lots of situations where guys are able to sort of take him off the dribble and score, even guards going through him and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously in the post, sometimes he can get worked. So, like, I don't think Nick feels absolutely secure with Boucher, even though the numbers do suggest that Boucher has been very good defensively. I don't think Nick feels that trust in him. And, I mean, I remember, like, early in the season, like, there was a defensive possession where he put in Stanley Johnson at the end against Charlotte over Boucher, and he benched Boucher for Stanley. He played offense-defense with a guy. And if you play offense-defense with a guy, unless the guy has, like, 5 fouls, like, you probably don't trust the guy defensively. So I think that's honest about what in terms of that sense. I don't think he's felt security. And then the Baines thing, like that just goes without saying. Like, yeah, obviously.
And also, I mean, Boucher obviously is a smaller guy. Like, I mean, I remember he was up against Dwight Howard, and it was kind of like giving like a coyote a chicken wing. Like, it was like not, it didn't look good. Yeah. it was like a sort of a scary thing. So I can see why. And I mean, even Adrian Griffin was like, oh, it's so great to have big finally, you know, which again was, I guess, sort of shade against Baines. So it's just like, there's a lot. It's like, oh, I'm licking my lips. It's so great now that we have big. It's been so long since we've had big. Yeah. So yeah, is Aaron Baines like crying somewhere?
It seems like his career's over and his time in Toronto.
Yeah.
Will not be, he's not going to be, you know, drinking a tall can of Foster's saying love that year in Tampa and when he's back in Sydney, or I don't know where he lives.
Which, yeah.
I guess it's bad.
It's tough. He's really been like one of the most unpopular Raptors I remember, honestly. And there's been like Raptors who have not performed. And Baines is not the only one who has been one of those cases, but. Yeah, wow. He's just, it's been deeply unpopular this year. What can I say?
Yeah, people really hate him. Yeah, people do hate him. I guess.
I mean, he just couldn't play. That's it. It's just what it is. Like,
And he replaced two guys who everybody loved.
He came into the worst possible situation for him. And yeah. And I'm always reminded of when Kyle Lowry said at the beginning of the season, when asked about Aaron Baines, when we were kind of excited about him, let's be real. Kyle said, my goal is to make sure he has the best year of his career. And that did not happen. That did not happen. It was the opposite. But it's kind of sad. I mean, to be honest,
he meant on the golf course, Will. He meant on the golf. He's teaching him how to golf.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Yikes. Well, yeah. I mean, after, you know, we have lots of Ibaka. And I think, you know, you have, think of JV, you think of Ibaka. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't replace them with him. Like, it's sad.
No, no. So,
yeah.
All right, Shanta, we're gonna let you all go. Right. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate the kind words.
Okay, thanks very much. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I mean, Baines, massive brick. Shout out to Alex Len. Alex Len,
Alex Len looking good these days, man. Alex Len looking good these days.
He wanted to make the playoffs.
Oh, man. Shout out, Alex Len, man.
Shout out.
All right, let's bring in Aziz from New York. What's going on, Aziz?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
How you doing?
Nice to talk to you guys. You guys living the dream, huh? Being Raptors fans. Will, you gonna meet Drake anytime soon?
Am I gonna meet Drake anytime soon? No, I doubt it, but
yeah,
I have walked by Drake like at least three times at the arena, like with the media and and Drake go through the same tunnel in the back.
Please tell him thank you for making Giannis miss those free throws. That's my life dream.
You know what? Yeah, he was Drake. You know what? Honestly, people hate on Drake, and there was all the whole bandwagon thing. People are like, "Oh, look at people got salty about like, oh, Drake's gonna stand this team or that team." Like, did you see Drake's behavior throughout the entire
those two free throws? He made it up.
No, but I'm just saying, like, throughout that entire run, Drake was super loyal. He was there at all the games in Toronto. He was at all these events. He did so much for the community. Like, people gotta stop hating on Drake, man. Just because he has a life that everyone else probably can't even dream of. Like,
yeah, he definitely was as happy as it could be.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Bro, this man was taking pictures with Kawhi's mom on the parade bus, man. This guy was doing his very best. Trust me.
He tried so hard. If he had got Kawhi back, I would have a poster of Drake next to my bed every day.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, that's a different question. I got two questions for you guys. The first one is about Flynn. Quick question. Just wondering if you think that pick, I think he was like 30 or whatever pick he was, before we went into the bubble, Masai obviously held off on making any big trades. Do you think that there was a market for that 30?
Well, looks like we may have lost Aziz.
Was there a market for that 30th pick? All right, Aziz, try to get back on the line, I guess. But, yeah, was there a market for that 29th pick? Probably not. No, I mean, there is always a market for a pick. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that it didn't really hold, like, huge trade value, I would say. It's turned out to be a pretty decent draft in terms of, like, players around this range. Like, there were a pretty decent number of players that, like, you know, were worthwhile. Do you know what I mean? Like, so Malachi was taken 29th. You know, Peyton Pritchard at 26. You know, Emmanuel Quickly at 25. RJ Hampton's getting minutes now with Denver. He was at 24. He hasn't really shown too much yet. Desmond Bane was picked 30 right after Malachi. And then Théo Maledon was taken 34th of OKC. Xavier Tillman was taken at 35. Who else was on this list that I recognize? Sabin Lee has been pretty decent every time. He's killed the Raptors like both times. So he was picked 38. Like, there were some decent players in this range, which is kind of what you would expect. That end of the first round, start of the second round is usually when these like pretty good college players end up going. Like guys who are more experienced, yeah. Like Pritchard, like Flynn, like Bane. Well, Bane not so much, but Xavier Tillman was also a guy who's played a few years in college. Like, that's probably where guys where you would think low upside but like high floor would go. And yeah, in that range, you generally end up with some pretty good pros, because it turns out if you're a good player, you're probably going to continue to be a good player. I love drafting for upside. It's so funny to me. Maybe just take a good player, but I'm not sure how much trade value there was. But Josh, what do you think of Malachi, man? By the way, we got to change Malachi's missions. He's it's unfortunate, but.
Who did we suggest last time? Yeah, Malachi's. I think we went back to Stanley's suggestions, actually. Malachi's been good. He's got to figure out a way to be productive regardless of the situation he's put in by Nick Nurse. He seems to really like starting. I mean, who doesn't? It's kind of like a classic phenomenon. But I think that, you know, at some point this season, I'd like to see a good shift with him and Gary Trent out on the court together, making things happen, because, you know, there's a potential that those guys are backcourt pairings next year. I think it's unlikely, but he's looked good with the starters. He's been great in the fourth quarter, which is cool. Like, it's always good to have a guy who's able to make tough shots in late moments. But I don't know. I guess I'm a little underwhelmed by the consistency given his experience in college. But it's hard to become a pro. Like, I don't underrate that. I am hoping that through the rest of the season and into next season, you'll start to see him be a bit more consistent with bench units, because that's probably what's in the cards for him next season. Yeah, but I like him. Like, I can find it easy to cheer for him. What is that broadly where you're at?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think just because he played well in college and he was really good in college, like, it doesn't necessarily say anything about the NBA. Like, it's just such a big jump. Like, it's really night and day. But yeah, I like him. The fact that, you know, I totally agree with you. Like, he does need to find a way to be productive in all situations, which is not entirely on Malachi. Like, it's also on the coach to put your players in successful situations. But the thing is, coaches don't manage for one specific guy. Coaches manage for the team as a whole. And let's be real, Fred and Kyle are both way better than Malachi at the moment. So those guys are going to get their minutes. And so for Malachi to get more minutes, he would need to, A, have one of those guys leave, which is possible in the offseason. But B, like, just to get better playing off the ball. So, you know, to be effective without running pick and rolls. To be effective moving away from the play, getting open for threes. And we're starting to see a little bit more of that of late, but you're not seeing the same kind of off-ball movement you would see from Fred, where he gives it up, then he kind of quickly makes a cut one way or the other, or he takes a few steps back. And, you know, like, Fred's a great example of, like, what Malachi could do. I know people always, well, people might get annoyed at that comp because, like, Malachi's his own guy, but I think the blueprint is absolutely what the Raptors are trying to apply here with Malachi. And one of the things that Fred did really well is, like, in his third or fourth year, he extended his three-point range, like, really far back. Like, so now he'll take threes that are, like, 30, 32 feet, 33 feet. And so that's something that he can do. So
I think I want to find if there's a prop bet anywhere in the world that Fred hits a logo shot next season at a big bank. I think it's going to happen.
I agree. Also, I think one thing that teams should be doing is putting a bigger logo on the floor. You know, extending that logo, like writing a long logo so that people would be like, oh, from the logo, you know? So I do feel like it's different depending on the arena. Vin Baker from Alberta. Vin, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Yo, Big Head Lou, better than Josh Hart. What's good, brothers? How you guys doing, man?
Come on, man.
What's yo, good? It's all love, man. It's
what's good
love.
In Alberta, man? Why are you calling us at 10 a.m. In the morning, man? Aren't you at work? Like...
Yeah, I'm working from home, man. We work like 2 hours a day. You know what it is.
Yeah, you know how it is.
It's all good. It's all good. Yo, shout out to my guys on Real GM, man. Shout out to Tank Nation, World Order, my dogs, salute.
Shout out Real GM.
Yo, real quick, man.
Real GM is violent, man. Real GM is the most violent space in Raptors fandom. Let me just put that out there, all right?
It is. I'm not gonna lie, but it's got some quality entertainment on there. Not gonna lie. But they know who I am. What's good though. But yo guys, I just want to real quickly touch on Gary Trent real quick. I'm not gonna lie. I haven't seen a Raptors role player hog the ball this much since Allen Anderson, man. But I just want to like straight up just ask you guys like point blank, just a quick question. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Do you guys see a major difference between Gary Trent and, like, Raptors' version of Terrence Ross? Like, in terms of, like, they can't really get to the rim and they create space for a jump shot, but that's kind of the extent of their offense. And if they're not hitting the jump shot, it's kind of like, what are you doing? I know he's young, but, like, what do you guys think about that comparison? And I'm starting to think, like, do we really want to throw like $15 million a year at this guy when it's kind of like the dog days of the season where he's been up and down, he's had some great games. And like, I kind of get nervous about those guys at the end of the season who may play well, even though he's not playing that well right now going into next season with a contract. But what do you guys think about that? And I'll get out of here.
Okay. So, I wouldn't worry too much about like, this is some sort of like end of the season mirage. Like this isn't Mike James in 2006. Putting up like 25 points per game in like the month of April. So he got a contract. No, I mean, he put up the exact same numbers in Portland. Like in 41 games of Portland this season, he averaged 15 points, you know, 2 rebounds and assist. You know, he's averaging 16 points right now, 3 rebounds and, you know, an assist right now with the Raptors. The shooting percentages are almost the exact same. He's a little bit down on 3-point shooting. He's a little bit up in 2-point shooting. So, you know, that's, I don't think this is not his ability as a player. I mean, the Terrence Ross thing, I think with Terrence Ross, like, I really did worry about him physically. I thought he would get exploited defensively. And maybe that was at the time when the Raptors had, like, DeMar as the other wing. So Terrence had to be, like, a 3-and-D guy. And you know he's not a 3-and-D guy. He's a 3-and-3 guy. Like, that's really what he's going to do. So he's... I trust Gary Trent defensively more than a guy like Terrence. But honestly, even if Gary turns out like Terrence, it's not the worst case scenario. The worst case would be like, you know, he completely falls off, which I don't really see that in the future. But I think, you know, even Terrence, like Terrence is a pretty decent player. Like that's one of those things is you, if you can get guys on a decent contract, maybe they're not part of your core, but they're movable, right? Like I felt like Norm was always in that kind of space between he was kind of the core, but he was also not kind of the core. And eventually when the time was right, you could move him. And that might be ultimately the situation you end up with Gary. But I also think that like Gary needs to find his role with this club. And I think like, you know, whether that's the sixth man or whether that's starting, like he's going to have to figure that out. I mean, to be honest, I just like his mentality a little bit more than Terrence. I don't know. Terrence always felt kind of like a little bit too laid back, a little bit too shy. Whereas I don't think there's anything shy about what Gary does. So I don't know. That's not the greatest basketball analysis, but we haven't actually seen that much of Gary either. But I agree with you, though. I do worry about what he's going to do without his shot dropping because, like, you know, he hasn't done that much elsewhere outside of scoring. But that might just be his role as well. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'm kind of.
Yeah, man.
I think the defensive upside is like order of magnitude different than a guy like Norm or Terrence before him. It's just been kind of a tough couple weeks. Like I don't know. I feel like I've seen enough already to feel okay with him coming back. I think that the organization has succeeded with guys in that role with skill sets comparable to Gary Trent's. I don't think he's going to fail. And I don't think that he's going to make enough money. I don't think that he is going to underperform the contract that he gets because he's not going to have an incredible amount of leverage, and he's going to have a pretty well-outlined role to fill. And I trust him to do the job. Like, I don't think he's going to I agree with Law. I don't think he's going to be firmly a core piece in the way that we look at OG, Pascal, and Fred, but I think he'll be a nice complimentary guy who's around. If you can flip him into something better, maybe. If not, he's going to do his job.
Yeah, he's also 22 right now, man, which is like he's the youngest guy on the team. I really do feel like, you know, if you look at age as sort of like an avenue to upside, like, yeah, I mean, he's literally the youngest guy on the team. They brought in, like, rookies. Like, the rookies that were singing Miley Cyrus songs, like, those guys are both older than Gary Trent, which is kind of funny to me, man.
Yeah. All right, guys, yo, I really appreciate the call, man. And what's it called, yo? I'll take care, man. Take care.
All right, thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. Legend, man.
Gary Trent's going to have fun in Toronto. I assume when he's here in the next season sometime. Yeah. He seems like a Cactus Club all-star already.
Wow, come on, man. No, I feel like Gary would be the kind of guy that would seek out some of the more like obscure Toronto places. You know, like that's one thing I loved about Serge was like, I mean, whatever. Serge lived in like that, the hotel downtown, like Bay and whatever. And yeah. You know, that's like generally speaking, the Raptors don't leave the downtown core like that. But like, yeah, man, I like the fact that Serge was like going to like Kensington Market to like buy what do you eat? Oh, cow tongue. Now for the first ever episode of How Hungry Are You with Biz Magbiambo, who's on there buying cow tongue from Sanigan's. And then he was going to like Rosan and stuff like that. So like, you know what? Expand your territory. Listen to all Raptors that come to Toronto in the future, like. Please leave the downtown core. The downtown core might be the most boring part about Toronto. Like, let's be real. I want Josh. What? Who's the first Raptor that's gonna be in Rexdale? Tell me this. Right. Who? Now.
Well, I'm sure that there've been Raptors already to Rexdale, but of this core,
aside from Lou Williams, which other Raptors were in Rexdale? Lou Williams was visiting family in Rexdale, bro.
Yeah, he was at Kipling and Dixon, checking out on his. All of his cousins.
Oh, jeez.
I have no idea who the next Raptor go to Rexdale, but I do see in my mind pictures of Gary Trent Jr. and OG Anunoby at the Aga Khan Museum, just in like cool outfits. I see that happening, and that'll be pretty tight. I don't know. It's good for Raptors to get a bigger, broader sense of what the city has to offer and who lives here. It's kind of like I was watching footage of Patrick Patterson doing one of his like interview shows when he would interview celebrities at Cineplex about movies. I'm like, this is just not very cool. But I don't know. Shout out to the team behind it. I'm sure it was fun for Patrick Patterson to talk to Anthony Mackie. But what? I don't know.
What a strange crossover. All right. We're going to bring in Cedric from Ottawa. Cedric wants to talk about trade market options. Cedric, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Good. So I know you guys talked about like Lauri Markkanen being an option for the five next season, but I was wondering if we wanted to address that in the trade market, what would you guys think about like the defensive upside of Miles Turner versus the offensive upside of like a Christian Wood?
That's a very interesting question. Honestly, I think Christian Wood, I do believe in his defensive skills in a winning situation. Like, I don't think it's a Hassan Whiteside thing where it's like, his defensive numbers look good, but like he's always like on bad defensive teams and stuff like that. Like, I do think if you put him in a winning situation, I like Christian Wood's tools defensively. I think he's just a better player than Miles Turner in general. But I think Miles right now is undeniably more accomplished defensively, and I mean that's always a trade option. You know, the Raptors could try to, you know, because Indiana's like, I just don't know what's the deal with Indiana. So they fired their coach, Nate McMillan, which, by the way, Nate is now coaching the Hawks, and the Hawks are doing really well. Just saw them beat the Bucks yesterday without Trae Young. But, you know, Indiana's in ninth with Nate Bjorkgren. They've won three straight, so that's nice, but they're, like, under 500. The two centers, I still feel like it's still a little bit awkward playing the two of them. They're not being maximized. And, like, yeah, that would always make sense as a trade option. It's just really a question of what are you trading to Indiana to make that happen? Because you probably need to, I mean, you know, Miles is making 20 mil, so you probably need to put at least like 15, 16 million.
Yeah.
And the only contracts Raptors have in that range, unless you're going to bundle a few players together in that trade, is like you're talking about OG, Fred, like one of those two guys. And I wouldn't trade either of those two guys straight up for Miles Turner. But who knows? Maybe you do like a Boucher plus something. I think the Pacers seem to love former Raptors. You know, with the coach, with O'Shea Brissett, you know, shout out to him, making real moves with the Pacers. I think a double-double the other day, signed three-year deal. So that'd be interesting. I would not be against Miles Turner. I think he would fit a lot of what the Raptors need in terms of rim protection, three-point shooting from the center position. Do worry about the rebounding a little bit, but that's fine. I'll take two out of the three.
Is he really for sale, though? Like, I know that there were rumors around the trade deadline that passed that Miles Turner was available, but I don't know. It feels like every 6 months they're like, yeah, Pacers are shopping Turner, and nothing ever materializes. Mm. Like, do they have really high demands for him? I don't know. I'm not totally sure he's actually out here.
Yeah, no, that's fair to ask. I mean, you know, you hear things that you never really know what's necessarily true. Like, what was the idea, though? We're like, oh, yeah, they're going to sign and trade for Gordon Hayward, and they're going to put Miles Turner in that deal. Which, by the way, the Celtics with Miles Turner would look pretty damn good. Just saying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a fair question to ask. I think when you're trading with Indiana, too, one thing I've noticed with them is they seem to really like acquiring players on long-term contracts. So they did it with TJ Warren. They did it with Caris LeVert recently. Malcolm Brogdon was a sign and trade, but that was contingent on him actually signing a 4-year deal. So I'm kind of counting that as well. They did it with Oladipo when they traded Paul George and Sabonis on a rookie deal. But like, they really want players who are going to be on the team and who are under contract for a while. So that's one thing to note with Indiana. But he'd be interesting. I would not be opposed.
Me neither.
He leads the league in blocks this year, 3.4, man. That's pretty good.
He's a great player. I don't. That's the part that doesn't make sense to me. Is why is he always for sale?
I think it's just the weird fit with Sabonis. That's it.
Sabonis.
So, yeah, we're gonna get lottery from Toronto. I want to talk about Kyle coming off the bench, man. See, I told you, people really want to do this now. What's going on?
How's it going, man? Nice to be on the phone with you, William. What's up, Josh?
What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of get your guys' opinion on it. I feel like the season is obviously dwindling down. And it's about time that we know that little stretch we had when the guys were playing and now everyone's back. I just feel like Kyle just takes up so much attention, and, you know, he does have the, I guess, the longitude in the team, but it feels like the guys are just, they're less productive when he's back.
I mean, I feel like they feel less of a responsibility to sort of over the team. You know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah,
like he's here and you kind of expect him to sort of carry this load. And I think that's not the right approach to take. I think I wish everyone could be aggressive at the same time. Like, I think Pascal loses some aggressiveness when Kyle's out there, for sure. Maybe Fred does a little bit, although Fred seems to play really well with Kyle as well. Like, I thought Fred played great in the Knicks game as the off guard with Kyle as well. So I see your point. But you really want to bench Kyle, though?
I wouldn't say it's a bench. But the minutes have to go down. Because if he's taking 30-plus minutes, there's no point of a guy like Malachi getting 5.
Yep.
And then, what, Trent gets, what, 14?
Yeah, that's low.
You know, it doesn't really help, especially a guy like Trent who's he's a fire starter, so he needs to get shots up in order to get in a rhythm. Coming off the bench, he's not like a norm where he just has the activated switch, you know? I don't think he has that yet. With the team, he hasn't been acclimated long enough.
Well, yeah, even Norm struggled with the bench role. Like, the last two games of Gary, where people have seen him come off the bench and he's been struggling, like, that's pretty much what Norm did in that exact same role. And he gave you similar numbers.
Yep,
like, it's hard to get it started off the bench. Like, it really takes, like, someone like Lou Williams to come in, you know, have just a great rhythm, have a great confidence, just take a couple of jumpers, and all of a sudden you're in the game. Like, you got to jump right in. And I don't think that a shooter like Gary is not necessarily, because you're asking him basically to create a lot for himself, and that's just not what his game is primarily based on right now. But
that is true.
I think you could just cut down Kyle's minutes. Like, how many did Kyle play last game, man? Because you know it has
36.
Yeah, see,
36.
Like,
he played a lot.
Can you get it down to like 32? You know, and then you can fit one of those guys in. To be honest, Malachi, as long as Kyle is playing, Kyle and Fred are playing, he's just not going to get that many minutes. That's just what it is. Because Malachi's skill set is not to the point where he can play off the ball the way that like Fred and Kyle can coexist, because they know how to move and they know how to play off the ball and get their shots that way. Malachi doesn't have that yet. So until he has that, he's not going to play, because he's just not a better point guard than those guys. But I see your point with Gary, though. I don't like Gary playing like 14 minutes, 18 minutes. Like, try to get him to like the 24 range. And the only way you're going to do that is you cut down some of Kyle's minutes, or you go super small and play Gary at the 3, which he can do. But it does kind of leave you a little undersized, especially
Portland
looked
terrible when they did that. Whenever Portland did that,
Siakam's fouled out by the first quarter.
What's that? Oh yeah,
I think Siakam's fouled out first quarter. If he's playing the 5, it's over.
Yeah, I agree. It's not great for him. I don't know, man. The roster is unbalanced. Like, I think that's the point. Like, the roster is unbalanced, and I think that's something you address in the offseason, and that's probably why. Well, one of the reasons why Kyle moves on. So. But in the meantime, though, like, you know what I mean? Like, if the Raptors are that serious about making the play-in tournament, they're still going to rely on Kyle. He's, like, still one of the most productive players, I think, on the team, regardless of fit. I think you just kind of trust that he'll figure a way to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah, if you're going to, like, go down swinging, you would have to probably go down swinging with Kyle. That's just how it is.
With Kyle, that makes sense. Yeah, plus, he's just been here too long not to.
I think you're cutting into your, like, right, your leverage
a little bit. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Otter. I appreciate it.
Say it again?
Oh, no, I was just
going to... Okay, take
care. Yeah, take care. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I think it cuts into your leverage just a little bit in the offseason. If, let's say, you want to sign and trade Kyle, for example, or let's say you want to have the threat of re-signing Kyle to make other teams maybe offer more in the sign and trade. If you bench him now, like, I feel like you're really signaling that for sure he's not coming back. You know what I mean? And, you know, who knows if that's, like, that significant, but I also don't want to lose any leverage for the offseason.
So. I also think if there's anyone beating the drum of the play-in tournament, it's Kyle Lowry. He's too competitive, has real, like, I don't know, if Kyle's leaving at the trade deadline, it would have been predicated on his legacy. He's himself said he wants to retire a Raptor, even if it's a one day or whatever it is. He would be leaving the Raptors this season in order to compete for a championship. So if he has the opportunity to shock the world and upset the Nets, there's no one in that locker room, I think, more passionate about that opportunity than Kyle. So him giving up minutes so that Malachi can develop when they're still in the hunt for the playing tournament and an opportunity to, you know, be on ABC at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday again. They're going for it.
Jesus Christ.
At least that's my thinking. Kyle Lowry's minutes are probably not going to change until the season's out of hand. And I don't like Malachi, you're a rookie. You're playing with the greatest Raptor of all time. If that kind of stunts your development, I can't be too upset about it. I want the organization to do right by Kyle more than I want them to do right by Malachi right now.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with you. That's the thing. Like, if I do see the roster imbalance just a little bit, but I do see the long term implications, because obviously you're looking at 22-year-olds and Malachi and Gary as guys that you would want to have on the team moving forward, just with their timeline and things like that. But I don't know, man. You're not benching Kyle. You're just not. Like, I see the argument and things like that. You know, it has some merit to me. Just like I think any roster decision would have some merit. But like, bro, it's Kyle Lowry. Like, let's just
yeah, it's Kyle Lowry.
Let's just chill for a little bit, man.
Malachi, you know, you're be thankful you're not running missions.
Yikes. It is mad awkward that he's still on the team, though. I still can't believe Kyle did that 30-minute Zoom interview with every single reporter in existence, and like, I got the last question.
The kid from the finals came back.
Oh yeah, that was me basically. And I was like, "Yo, Kyle, man, I'm the last guy here, so I just want to say thank you, like, for everything you've done. You know, you brought us to the championship, you brought us some great times." And he's like, yo, come on, I'm not gone yet. And then, yo, he really came back, which was mad awkward, man. I don't think I've asked him a question since. No, I think I asked him about Gary, but yeah, it was a strange trade deadline, I'll say that much, and it continues to be strange to this point. But let's bring in Jonas from Brampton.
Away.
Hello?
Jonas? Hey guys.
What's going on?
Yeah, it's me. I'm good, man. You know, first time caller, long time listener.
Appreciate it.
Just wanted to ask about the upcoming off season. I wanted to ask about. I had this, you know, this thought that maybe Bradley Beal, since, you know, we don't really have the trade assets for Bradley Beal. But maybe if we, I had a feeling that Masai Ujiri would be going to Washington. And is there any scenario where Washington could accept a trade offer for Masai and we can get Bradley Beal?
Wait, you want to sign and trade Masai for Bradley Beal?
Not literally a sign and trade, but like you know, like a wink, wink. Hey, we'll give you guys Bradley Beal if we can get Masai Ujiri.
Nah, Masai's not. Didn't? Nah, this is. I mean, first off, I don't even know if Masai wants to go to Washington.
Round picked for Doc Rivers when they got rid of.
If he could get the steak, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Like, you might have to do that, right?
If Masai leaves over money, I'd be very disappointed in MLSC because they make enough money. I mean, yo, Rogers literally went down for a full day. Like, you know, that's how much they have Canada But anyways.
Honestly, go ahead.
I mean, look, I think that's just not as realistic. Like, Bradley Beal is like such, like, he's going to lead the league in scoring this year, if not him or Steph. Like, he's averaging. How many points is he averaging right now? He's averaging 31 points per game, shooting 48% from the field. He's shooting, you know, he's obviously a good shooter from three as well. Like, he's prolific, man. You're not gonna, even if Masai goes the other way and then you put some actual pieces in and maybe put the lottery pick and all this other stuff, like, that's just not gonna be enough. It just isn't.
No,
like, he's 27 too. Like, he's
of course,
really
I mean,
young.
We're gonna do. Okay, here's the offer. So we're gonna give, you know, first round picks to Malachi Flynn, you know, maybe even sign and trade Gary Trent, just a bunch of things on the table. But like, let's be honest, Bradley Beal has become kind of overrated. Like, don't get me wrong, we want him on the Raptors, but he's not really a winner yet. So, like, you know, he's kind of become overrated, but, you know, we still want him on the team. But my idea was, you know, Washington, I mean, Masai is that good, so to, like, where he could be traded for a star player. And I feel like all the rest of the NBA knows
that. I don't think so.
I mean, this has literally never happened. And I wouldn't. I know Masai's good, but he's not that good, man. Plus, if Masai goes to Washington, really, he's gonna bring Masai's maximum first. Like his maximum value would be like a first round pick, maximum, and that'd be like if Masai left and you got a first round pick in return, that'd be like the best you could do. But you gotta think from Masai's perspective. Why would you go to Washington and then not have at least something to work with? Like, what are you gonna do in Washington at that point? Like, start your charity again and.
Abdia
and trade like Russell Westbrook, like it just doesn't sound that sexy. You know what I mean? Like, if Masai's going to Washington, he probably want to have Bradley Beal available so that he can maybe make that trade or build around him. I think that's, but yeah, no, yeah, I think we're overvaluing Masai, okay. Man. We really are, man. No executive is worth that much. Like, no single executive is worth that much.
Honestly, okay, and just one last thing. What would you say, like, the percentage breakdown of whether Masai stays or not?
This offseason? I think he stays.
I think
it's a short-term deal, but I think he's gone eventually, like, before 2025. But he's here next season.
Yeah, okay. I think, like, a two-year extension or something like that would make sense. Right. Yeah. All right, thanks for the call, Jonas.
Thank you, guys.
All right. All right.
Answer the call.
We are going to take our last caller of the day. We're going to get Matthew in from Toronto. He wants to talk about the new centers. So what's going on, Matthew?
Hey, Will. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Matthew?
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about, you and Josh, about Cam Birch and Freddie Gillespie. And see, like, what's the potential fit for them coming back another year?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably both be back. I think Cam obviously has an interest in playing for the Raptors. Of course, he's a free agent as well, so you never know for sure. But I think, you know, he clearly was interested in coming to the Raptors. He got a buyout for that reason, and he obviously came to Toronto. So, like, yeah, he's probably going to be back. And then Freddie Gillespie, I mean, I think Raptors probably signed him to a 10-day contract the rest of the way here. Or not 10, a two-way contract the rest of the way. They've converted Utah. So they have another two-way roster spot available. And that's probably the most prudent way to keep him. And then maybe you could look to re-sign him if he continues to play well after next year. Something like that. But I think they'll probably both be back, to be honest. They've both done really well.
So, Will, if the Raptors... So their two-way guys next year are going to be Gillespie and Watson? Is Watson gonna get another two-way contract?
No, so you can't sign a guy to two years in a row in two-way contracts. So what you're gonna need to do is either sign Watson or let him go. Yeah. But I think Gillespie's done enough that I would be pretty comfortable with him taking another two-way contract. And plus, once you convert him, you can free that spot up again, so... I think right now, you know, you would like to, because you've seen some of these guys come up from the G League and getting multi-year deals, right? You're seeing, like, OKC signed a guy from overseas to a multi-year deal, Gabriel Deck, you saw, what's his name? He signed, Alize Johnson was signing a three-year deal. You saw O'Shea Brissett, he signed a long-term deal as well. Part of that is these teams had exceptions left. They either had cap space, in the case of OKC, or they had cap exceptions left that they're able to sign up to long year deals with. And the Raptors didn't have any because we used all our exceptions on Alex Len and Mr. Aaron Baines.
I thought the Raptors had like two and a bit after the Baines, or did that just go to Len?
I think that went to either Len or Bembry or something like that. But yeah, they don't have any more exceptions. So that's why they only signed Utah to a 2 year deal. And that's probably why they can't sign Freddie Gillespie long term right now. But I don't like those long-term deals anyway, though. It's kind of exploitative in a way.
Yeah.
Because, like, Lou Dort is signed to, like, a four-year, like, $2 million deal. Like, that's ridiculous, man. Like, and the team holds options throughout the whole thing. Like, it's kind of unfair. You're really artificially limiting You're taking essentially you're taking advantage of a player who doesn't have a contract and locking him into a really, really artificially low contract. Like, it's the kind of stuff that you see in baseball a lot, and I don't like it, man. It's people are here to like work and make some money. Like, let's say Lou Dort is fantastic for 3 years, but then he hurts his knee, God forbid. But like, what are you gonna do at that point? You're just gonna cut him if you're OKC, and you're gonna let him walk away with like not enough money to put a down payment in Toronto? Like, get out of here, man. Anyway,
it is pretty troubling.
Yeah. All right, Matthew. Yeah.
I've been really impressed by what those two players have been. So I think that, yeah, if possible, I think I would probably want to bring them back. You know, I think it's kind of been, you know, overstated this year how much of a sore spot the center rotation has been. And I think, and to be honest with you, I don't really blame like Chris Boucher for that, because he's really exceeded everyone's expectation, in
absolutely
my opinion.
Yeah.
But guys like Baines and Len have, I would say, the nicest way I can say this, does not perform to the expectation of the management of the Raptors. So I've been very happy with Freddie and Kem, and I hope to see them next year.
Agreed, Matthew. Thanks for the call.
I have a good feeling you will.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. All right, Joshua. We're done with the calls, but we're not done with the show just yet. First off, I want to thank everyone who called in. That was really great. And Josh, our signature segment, Malachi is playing minutes kind of now. So Malachi's mission's got to be shelved. What are we doing? Are we going back to Stanley? What are we saying?
I mean, I think it's got to be Stanley. Like, I do feel a little worried for my close personal friend, Stanley Johnson. Don't know what happens for him next. Well, I think he'll have a job, but I don't know if it'll be one in the GTA.
Yeah. Well, in any case, let's do our Stanley suggestions. Josh, what do you have? I actually have two this week, and they're not like go outside for a walk and stuff like that. I've been giving some.
That seems like the classic William Loon. Go outside for a walk, stretch your legs, you know, call your parents. I feel like I've told people to call their parents.
Yeah, no, call your parents. Absolutely call your parents, man. It's a lovely experience every time. And cherish your parents. That goes without saying, man. That's but keep going.
An obvious suggestion, and it won't be my only one, is if you are eligible to be vaccinated, go out and get one. It's going to save lives. I have like someone in my world, their parents were vaccinated, but both contracted COVID, and one of them had no symptoms. And the other was in and out of the walk-in in an afternoon, and they're both fine now. So it's just really encouraging that two people in their late 80s contracted this deadly disease and are doing fine now, in part, clearly to me, to being vaccinated. So encourage everyone to check it out if they can. But for my Stanley suggestion this week, I'm going to recommend again my favorite restaurant in the city, Drupity's in Rexdale at the corner of 27 and Westmore. Their anniversary is coming up. Like, they're starting to promote it again, and I love that place. I don't get to go as often as I'd like, and I'm sure that Stanley, if you're ever able to make one trip back to Toronto, if I'm sure you will, you got to check it out. And when thinking about Rex earlier today, I wanted to support a business in my home neighborhood in the city, and I wanted to recommend it. Yeah, that's it. Also, I've been watching so much Curb Your Enthusiasm, and it's become my like post Raptors like cigarette viewing. Like, if the Raptors have a real tough performance, just watch an episode of Curb, take the edge off before going to bed. So yeah, Drupity's and Curb are my two big recommendations this week. How about you?
So my first recommendation is, well, both of them are things to watch. So recently I watched Our Towns, which is a documentary on HBO, made by HBO, and it's on Crave if you have Crave. It's very good. It's an hour and a half. It covers various towns across America and sort of looks at just sort of like how they're performing, sort of what issues they're dealing with. And it's a very like human lens at sort of what some of these issues they're facing and sort of like how they're coping with industries, social problems. And it's just a really good look, I think. Yeah, it was a very apolitical look, which I think it was a choice by the directors, but it was also, I think, that allowed more space to look at some of the tangible issues, like how are people dealing with people losing jobs? How are people dealing with addiction? How are people dealing with, you know, just the movement of people and things like that, and then trying to preserve their culture and trying to keep their history and adapting and trying to move on. So that's a really great doc. It was really shot beautifully, and I really would recommend Our Towns. And then the other thing I would recommend is The Food Ranger on YouTube. I've been watching probably 8 or 10 of these videos. It's just like, it's a white Canadian guy named Trevor. You can't really get more Canadian than that. And he's wearing plaid in many of these videos. But he's like going around parts of Asia and he's eating their food, going to have street food. For me, like he's gone to like at least a dozen Chinese cities. So I've been really enjoying watching that. I'm honestly, like, I'm learning a lot about my own culture, seeing him make these videos. He's very friendly. He actually speaks in Mandarin, which is actually fun. But he also goes to other places. He's gone up, you know, Pakistan, India, Iran, Egypt, Malaysia, you know, Japan, Vietnam. So, like, it's a very fun watch. And I think, honestly, like, in this time for us Canadians, when you really can't, like, travel for leisure, unless you're like mad rich, I guess. Yeah, like it's a great way to sort of see the rest of the world in a way. And I always enjoy those kind of videos. So it'll make you very hungry for noodles. And I'm probably going to have noodles for lunch. So Josh,
that's pretty good.
Yeah. Josh, thanks for doing this as always, man. Thanks to all the callers once again. And thanks to our producers working hard behind the scenes. And we'll be back 2 Mondays from now. Peace.
Peace.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.